Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So it seems like day 72 of the Kavanaugh saga, even though it really just
started,
moved this weekend into this week.
Yeah, well, an edict has been issued. She has to be, let them know by 10 a.m. tomorrow, Friday, whether or not she's going to show up on Monday. And if she does not show up on Monday, then there will be nothing, no hearing.
Well, she has to provide prepared testimony by Friday. So it's not just notifying, it's provide prepared testimony in advance of the public hearing. That's part of the issue. Right. And so that's sort of where we stand. And so now Democrats are continuing what they started yesterday, which is just decrying the process, that this is a sham. Kristen Gillibrand, senator from New York, you can add her into the mix of presidential aspirants and thus by definition demagogues. She was on with Jim Acosta on CNN. So, you know, that was a real grilling. Here's what she had to say about the process and what Ms. Ford is entitled to.
We should allow the corroborating witnesses. It's outrageous that they just want a he said, she said with just Dr. Ford with Judge Kavanaugh.
Yeah, the corroborating witnesses argument is their latest ploy. It's really interesting. Gillibrand mentions again and again Mark Judge, the friend of Kavanaugh, who Ford alleges was in the room during the incident.
Yeah, watching and then jumped on the two.
To separate them. He denies that. So that's, I don't know how much of a corroborating witness Mark Judge would make. He also doesn't want to testify.
No.
So there's that issue as well. But corroborating witnesses is the latest gambit. What are the corroborating witnesses going to look like? Are you going to parade all 200 people from Ford's prep school who signed the letter of support to her, most of whom didn't even go to school with her, right? It's the letter in that letter in question that's been bandied about as well. It spans graduates of that high school over like 50 years that are basically just using this as an opportunity to virtue signal their politics, to indicate their politics. It has nothing to do, and they have no requisite knowledge of the alleged incident. This is how silly this has become. But corroborating witnesses sounds like, oh, well, that sounds fair. Let's have a process. Let's bring forward people who know anything. They don't want to bring forward people who know anything. They just want to bring forward people to interminably delay this. Gillibrand continued about the indignities that Ford is suffering.
Oh, no.
She decided to come forward. She is being given an opportunity to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee on a rather flimsy story based on the evidentiary support, and she somehow is the victim in this.
The fact that Mark Judge doesn't want to testify, well, maybe he doesn't want to be under oath. And so that is a red flag to me,
red flag.
They are trying to railroad this. They're trying to create a sham hearing on Monday. There's no rush for this. They have not given her time. And to not even have the courtesy of an investigation of the facts first and then have corroborating witnesses. Anita Hill had not only an FBI investigation, but she had 22 witnesses on her allegations with more witnesses that wanted to testify. This sounds like a sham hearing designed only to have a he said, she said, but the truth is, I believe her. She has a credible allegation against Judge Kavanaugh. She told her therapist 5 years about it. Her husband, she told a friend a year ago. She told a reporter before Judge Kavanaugh was even nominated. This is all indicia of truthfulness, and now she wants an FBI investigation to get to the facts. I believe her, and I think the women of America should be paying attention right now to how the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee are treating a woman who wants to testify to make sure that someone who gets a lifetime appointment has the character necessary to be a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, she only went,
And there it is. I want to make sure the women of America are watching.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
This is all about November 6th, turning out college-educated women, mainly, who are inclined to grab onto cultural touchstones and have them vote for congressional Democrat candidates. That's what this is about. And, oh, by the way, just in case, again, you didn't think this was about identity politics, it's just about Me Too. It has nothing to do with white. It has nothing to do with men. It has nothing to do with Christian. John Garamondi, who, by the way, is a white dude, Democrat hack from California, member of Congress. Listen to him.
Women across this nation should be outraged at what these white men senators are doing to this woman. This woman needs a fair hearing, as every woman does who brings forth a charge such as Professor Ford is bringing forth.
Some old white dude decrying white dudes who aren't members of his party. But his point, to parroting the party line, white women should be watching that what these white men senators are doing. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Take your calls. Don't tell me this isn't, in addition to trying to tube Kavanaugh, that limited and important effort by the left, that it isn't also about prosecuting their identity politics and making November 6th not a referendum on your economic interests, but a referendum on their virtue signaling identity politics. What it means to be a good person, according to the left and the cultural institutions they control.
Well, and your girlfriend, well, I don't know, girlfriend, Senator Hirono from Hawaii.
Oh, Maisie.
Maisie was at it again yesterday.
The latest being a letter from the chairman to the Democrats saying, we have done everything we can to contact her. That is such I can hardly stand it.
She said that's BS. We know that that's what happened. Here's Chuck Grassley.
Doing everything that we can to make Dr. Ford comfortable with coming before our committee, either in an open session or a closed session or a public or a private interviews. That's four different ways she can choose to come.
And they're also offering to send lawmakers to California to interview her. That's what Great Lakes they're going to try to get her to speak and come forward. But nothing. Radio silence.
Right. Tell me again about the substance of the allegation, the seriousness of the accuser. And all of these demagogues running interference for her and just using, frankly, her as leverage to support the antics they've been engaged in from the start of this process, from the moment Kavanaugh was nominated. Nick in Northwest Indiana, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to bring something up. As a dumb cop, I was just kind of thinking about this, and I thought, doesn't anyone find it interesting that Dr. Ford hasn't filed any official report or her attorney hasn't directed her to file any official report with any local, county, or state agency in Maryland, which would have the jurisdiction?
Yeah, but that's...
And why not?
But that's sort
I'm
of...
I'm guessing...
Well, that's sort
Go ahead,
of,
I'm sorry.
That's sort of past post, right? I mean, her window to do that had, like, closed decades ago.
Well, but here's the thing. To initiate an investigation, a victim has to file a complaint.
No, right. I understand.
So what I find interesting is if she did file a complaint, that locks her into a legal document, making an official statement. And if I'm not mistaken, I know here in Indiana, and I'm sure Maryland has some criminal statute that has code for filing a false report.
Sure.
Not that her allegations are false, but I find that kind of interesting.
All right. Thanks for the call, Nick.
I mean, there's no physical evidence. There is just going to be a he said, she said. And so far, I'm believing the he part of it.
Well, to the issue of filing a report with the police, I mean, if she had done that in a timely manner 30 years ago plus, then yeah, that would be an important document. That didn't happen. And now that's sort of, it's irrelevant because it's not possible. Frank in St. Charles.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, the smoking gun on this Kavanaugh thing with this woman she would have had to have told somebody back when it happened, a close friend. I mean, you just don't completely bury it. Maybe she didn't tell her parents, but if she told a couple close friends, boom, he's done.
Okay.
That's proof in my book.
All right, thanks.
Well, she didn't,
well,
though.
She,
according
to, call,
to her therapist, she didn't say a word, and now people are trying to glom on this girl, Christina King, who knew Brett Kavanaugh and knew Christine, said that everybody was talking about it in school. The thing is that it happened in the summertime, so people couldn't have been talking about it in school. And she deleted her tweets, too. I mean, everyone's trying to pile on.
Delete her tweet. Yeah, I mean.
She's like, I deleted this because it served its purpose, and I'm now dealing with a slew of
I mean, lunchroom hearsay from 36 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. So, but to Frank and St. Charles, if there were people who, yes, if she told that at the time, who come forward and recount and substantiate her story, then it becomes more credible. I don't think it's dispositive of the issue, but we don't even have that.
No.
We just have people using her to their political ends.
Yeah, and the woman who wrote this Facebook post that deleted is a huge Democratic contributor.
And oh, by the way, I think it's still an open question that Dr. Ford, the good doctor, Miss Ford,
PhD, press here, dummy.
I don't think it has been disposed of whether or not she's using us for her political ends too. John and Palatine.
Hey, Dan and Amy. Dan, I was just wondering, as I understand it, supposedly the story is Kavanaugh jumped on her or was holding her down. But at the end of the day, if that might be bad behavior, but nothing happened, correct? Are we losing sight of that, or does that make any difference? And then how many people have we put on death row that ultimately we found through the therapy and stuff like that, that they were falsely and wrongly accused, but their lives were ruined anyway?
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call.
Rise to the level of somebody who's on death row.
No, and
but the part was that he covered her mouth allegedly, and she thought that he would inadvertently kill her.
And again, this is not a criminal trial. This is not a criminal court of law. This is a political hearing. So let's not apply criminal standards here because they're not applicable. Tony on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How you guys doing?
Hello.
Hey, listen. This, you know, you're absolutely right. This is all political. And if the American people don't see this, we're all stupid. Simply this, okay, we're talking about the liberals, the left, right? These are the ones that are compassionate, that care about people, and they want to do always, you know, make everybody a nice, warm, safe, fuzzy. On the other hand, they want to destroy a man's life over some allegations that are from 50 years ago, whatever they were. And it's a, you know, when you think about this, I mean, it's like, okay, let's destroy this man's life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but because he's not in our party.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in our party. That's how they work.
Yeah.
Easy peasy.
That's
Have
it.
A good day.
Thanks for
and
the call,
yesterday,
Tony.
And help me out with this, Dan. They're saying in 1991, President Bush then ordered the FBI to investigate Anita Hill's claims. But that, why aren't we doing it this time? Why isn't the FBI getting involved? But what are they investigating? I mean, it's a hearsay for something that happened 32 years ago.
If this would have been brought forward in a timely fashion by a Dianne Feinstein,
yeah, this is all.
If she would have consulted the chairman of the committee, Chuck Grassley, this could have been included in the background check number 6 that was done by the FBI for the committee at the outset of this. But 11th hour jackpotting of the committee and the process and the American public to try and push off this vote past the midterms, so to take advantage of this for solely political reasons, why should Chuck Grassley or Senate Republicans play along with Democrat political tactics? They shouldn't.
Listen to the podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy.
Tried to make a song about Keith Ellison. That didn't last too long.
That's Nico and Ben's. Am I wrong? So is Keith Ellison's accuser wrong? Why can't she get any attention from the Me Too minders? Valerie Richardson, writing in the Washington Times about Karen Monahan, the ex-girlfriend of Keith Ellison, who is the deputy chairman of the Democrat National Committee, member of Congress.
And now your candidate, Democratic candidate for Attorney General of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no movement there, nothing.
So this surfaced, and we've discussed it, and now there's new information that's been provided by Ms. Monahan. She posted online a Minnesota medical clinic's write-up from her visit to corroborate her accusations of physical and emotional abuse that were made public in August. She writes, when I post this, it gets deleted every time. The document is from the Park Nicolet Clinic. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Dated November 28th of 2017. In the write-ups, quoting clinic's progress notes, she states that she was in a very stressful environment for years, emotional and physical abuse by a partner with whom she is now separated. She did not have any physical injuries that required a physical examination in the past. She identifies the individual she was involved in as Congressman Ellison, and she is worried about retribution if she identifies him publicly. Minnesota Democrats aren't buying this.
No.
There was a Star Tribune and Minnesota NPR poll taken. 5% of Democrats believe the allegations against Ellison. 30% don't. 65% don't know. And this is interesting because it speaks to the Kavanaugh dynamic as well. 42% of Republicans believe the allegations. 15% say they're false, 43, not sure. So 8 times as many Republicans believe the allegations as Democrats, because in these he said, she said cases, what do you have people do? You really don't know. We don't know what happened. There's no facts or evidence that's dispositive of the matter. And so people revert back to their political leanings.
Yeah. And he apparently threw her on a bed, then dragged her off a bed. But, I mean, she's so desperate, Dan. As she tweeted out, here is one of my doctor visits stating the abuse that occurred. It amazes me the measures people have to take for their humanity to be validated. Hashtag me too. Put that right on Twitter again. But
this is more evidence than Ms. Ford has presented against Kavanaugh.
Exactly.
So why no interest? And I'm not saying that because you are in the middle of a confirmation hearing. So I understand it. I understand that that's a focus. Why no interest?
He's
in the middle
of an election.
Right. He's a nominee. Right. There's a November election. That's right. In addition to that, this has been a story that surfaced in August, as we mentioned. And so.
And he was all banged up about it, too, when he talked about it with Gail King on CBS Morning News.
I'd say, look, we loved each other. We don't have to destroy each other.
It's obviously very emotional for you. Is that what you think she's trying to do?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to speculate on motive, I don't know. I've asked myself many times why. But not going to try to speculate on motive.
The Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party, began investigating the charges last month. DNC Chairman Tom Perez is deferring to the local party with respect to the review of the charges. But, I mean, it's just the lack of interest in what she has to say. She's a little bit upset about it, too, because she's a Democrat.
Yeah, she claims that her own party has turned on her, and people in her own party are making her feel bad because they're not taking this seriously.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Now, when we discussed this before, I was not inclined to kind of believe her story, or at least not believe it based on what she had presented so far and in the context of Ellison's response. Part of the problem is her son said there was a video of her being physically abused by Keith Ellison, which she said also existed, but then she's not going to produce it. And then she said it doesn't exist anymore. It got lost in some
locker. Wasn't a storage area?
Something like this. So her story about this alleged video changed, and that undermined her credibility for me. And again, I'm just trying to look at the facts here because, as I always say, these are case and fact-specific matters. So the standard is sort of an evidentiary and a credibility standard. It's not, you know, everybody who makes an allegation should be believed nonsense except when they're not serving my political interests. That's the D.C. standard. That's not my standard. So as much as I loathe Keith Ellison politically, there's just not enough presented here. And even with this note or report, part of a report that she posts from this clinic, I mean, again, did not have any physical injuries that required a physical examination in the past. The notes just basically recount what Karen Monahan said. So just because a medical professional takes down what a patient said, that doesn't make it true.
Right.
So I don't know that this really gives her more standing other than the fact that she did tell medical professionals about it. So, I mean, it's not something, it's something that she's been saying for a while. This is a report that's a year and a half old. So, okay, that's something. But I don't think it fully adjudicates the matter.
And according to Star Tribune in Minneapolis, they said that she wrote on Twitter this week, "I don't have to show a video that shows me in a vulnerable position. Did they even think what I may or may not have been wearing?" But Allison says there's no video exists because it didn't happen.
Right, and
so she's back to.
And also this like physical and emotional abuse. Emotional abuse, sort of, I have a hard time getting my hands around that.
I'm emotionally abused.
Yeah.
And I emotionally abuse.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm an abuser. I'm a giver and a taker.
Where does that rise to, like, the level of, like, disqualifying conduct or conduct that is relevant for confirmation to a political post or in your professional life? I mean, what?
Yeah. I mean, if you think you're being emotionally abused, you don't like your partner, you can leave.
I mean,
get out of the relationship.
Right. I mean, I know
that's a hard one.
You just have to. I just want more specificity. If you want to make that claim, you can make that claim, but you got to support it with some sort of specific allegations or evidence in furtherance of this nebulous idea of emotional abuse that's like a throw-in in every divorce proceeding, right?
Maybe she was emotionally abused because he didn't propose to her, so she felt emotionally abused. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why women feel abused. Emotionally.
I feel emotionally abused by Keith Ellison by having to watch him in the political arena. I don't know if that offers me a claim. Cindy in Joliet, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Hello, Cindy. Hello, Cindy. Good.
Yeah. Oh, hey.
Oh,
sorry.
There she is. Oh, the crickets.
Yeah, you kind of dropped out there. Listen, I just heard that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to come forward that Abe Lincoln smacked her on the ass in 1863.
Hey.
Hi-yo!
So that's not.
Hey.
Okay.
Our very
family
good.
Family show.
Thanks for the call, Cindy.
We call it the Butt Talks.
Jeff and Dundee.
Dan, Amy. Do you remember the Wallaby case? Do you remember that case here in Chicago?
Case. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where the girl, I think her name was Susan Smith, I'm not sure, she lied about being raped because she didn't want to, I don't know, she didn't come through. She lied about it. This poor guy ends up in prison for I don't know how many years until DNA testing exonerated. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I'd
have to kind of piece together the
it was like every day in the Tribune.
Well, this was a girl,
but anyway,
this was a girl who was murdered, a young girl who was murdered.
No, she was never murdered.
She
just claimed that she was raped.
Well, that wait, what?
And, Wallaby.
No, Jacqueline DeWallaby was a young girl who was murdered.
So, okay, then it was another, maybe I'm confusing another case, but you know, I want to just say that, you know, I went to Prospect High School, so Amy, I'm a fellow frauder. Yeah, right. But I went to Iowa State, so we're enemies. Anyway,
you must have better rights.
Anyway, you're emotionally
abusing
me.
So anyway, real quick,
now.
My sister, who graduated from Iowa State, was living out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. She's jogging out there down Amish country, and some guy pulls his car over, pushes her down a ditch, tries to pull her panties down, and someone else luckily came by and stopped you know, hey, what's going on down there? You need some help. And the guy runs off. Well, that traumatized my sister so bad that she needed psychiatric help.
Mm-hmm.
My brother-in-law had a standing order with the locksmith to change the locks in the house every week. And so if somebody is traumatized by an attempted whatever, you want to call it rape, attempted rape, whatever, assault, it just doesn't go away. It's just like something that you don't remember for 35 years. So this is a bunch of baloney.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, Jeff, and for sharing that story. Glad your sister's okay. Greg in Schaumburg.
Okay, Dan and Amy, I want to capture the last hour or all of this, and since you two know how to fix anything, given the fact that this is the new standard for politics, where are we and how do we fix this and can we?
Boy, Greg, how do we fix all of this? Where are we? John Cass says we're in the McCarthy era. John Cass writes about this, have you no sense of decency, Senator Feinstein, which obviously is a reference to Joseph Welch, the attorney for the U.S. Army, who leveled that rhetorical question at Joseph McCarthy when he was investigating alleged communist activity in the military, in the U.S. Army specifically. Have you no sense of decency, Dianne Feinstein? Yeah, I think she's further degraded our politics, and the degradation happens quickly. And we're getting at a steeper angle, so it's a longer climb back. How do we fix it? I don't know. I guess, you know, Republicans need, I think Republicans need more Ben Sasses, even though I know he's been somewhat antagonistic to Trump. I think you need more philosophically grounded, courageous intellectuals in Congress. The Democrats need to be, the Democrats are going to, I'm going to say something that they'll never do. They need to be honest about their motivations. Your Republicans should be, too. They need to be transparent about their worldview. Sohrab Amari has a good piece in the New York Post. You know why this is so important to them and why they'll do anything and burn anything down and destroy whoever they need to destroy to prevent Brett Kavanaugh. Because the last 50 years of victories they've achieved in the advance of cultural Marxism have largely come through the courts, not through this small d democratic process, not through legislatures, not through elections, other than elections that put executives in power who can make judicial appointments. They've come through the courts since Griswold in 65. And they're worried about those victories being undone by the courts, in which many instances they should be. So I think, how do we fix this? I don't know. It's like saying, how do you fix humanity? People in pursuit of power with a government at every level, but since we're talking about the federal government, that has way too much power and way too many goodies to hand out. And so is corrupt through and through. How do you fix it? Rediscover federalism, unwind some of that government and some of the power that's attendant to being a temporary representative of a group of people in a congressional district or a Senate or a state, I should say, or even the country. I guess that'd be a start.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. This is an interesting aspect of it, too, that we really haven't discussed, talking about Kavanaugh in this text. We're talking about the claim by Keith Ellison's ex-girlfriend that she was physically and emotionally abused. We were going through that. And just on the matter of emotional abuse, because she released these notes from a medical clinic that just recount what she told medical professionals about what was happening to her. They said there was no physical injuries for them to treat in the report. So the on the issue of emotional abuse, I said, you know, emotional abuse is sort of this catch-all phrase that's used, and I think you have to be more specific if you want in order to understand exactly what constitutes emotional abuse in a particular situation.
Well, yeah, an example of what he allegedly did. So, you know, I can't stand you, I hate you. Then 2 seconds later, I love you. I mean, this is just conjecture on my part, but I don't know how he emotionally abused her.
Right, and that's what I was asking. Text from 708, your mockery of emotional abuse is ridiculous. Grow the hell up. It's interesting, that reaction to what I said, because it's representative of a viewpoint. It was a viewpoint of the left, and it's consistent with what Lawrence O'Donnell tweeted yesterday, you know, MSNBC guy.
Yeah.
Let's try living in a country where teenage girls can be less afraid of rape, and teenage boys are much more afraid that committing sexual assault will always catch up with them one way or the other.
I'm afraid we're raising a society of boys that aren't interested in all the girls because they're scared to even approach them. You know, what's appropriate, what's not?
Yeah.
Can I hold her hand at a movie? Can I?
Well, that's.
And they're always guilty.
Well, that's
another
issue.
I mean, used to be innocent before proven guilty, but now they're just guilty.
Mm-hmm.
All men are rapists. It's getting really old, and I'm really sick of this Me Too movement.
And that,
I'm sick of it.
And that's sort of where I'm going, because Larry O'Donnell's tweet and the 708er who, you know, excoriated me, because I'm not a grown up, because I want specifics. That's not being a grown up. Emotional abuse and just ceding the territory, that's being a grown up. Okay. But this so both are like a perfect encapsulation of leftism. Individuals are expendable. The truth is optional when you're crusading to create heaven on earth. You see?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, the Larry O'Donnell's tweet, hey, if we have to sacrifice Brett Kavanaugh's career, if his reputation, if we have to negatively impact his wife and his daughters, hey, that's just what you have to, and whether it's true or not, we're just going to have to assume it's true. If we're wrong, hey, we're wrong. But the truth is optional here. We're in pursuit of a greater good. This is actually, ironically, the same attitude of the real predators who have been outed, thankfully, because of the Me Too movement and some reporting by Ronan Farrow specifically. What was the Harvey Weinstein defense? I can't deal with these charges right now. I'm going after the NRA. I'm good old Harvey Weinstein. You need me. Right? This is the defense. It's frankly, Blaise Cupich, Cardinal Cupich. It's his defense of Pope Francis and sex and sexual misconduct within the church. We've got bigger things. We got to talk, you know, refugee and immigration issues and climate change. We have important things to deal with. I can't deal with what you want me to deal with.
Well,
and this is those who think they're aligned with the Me Too are actually aligned with the abusers when they take this approach that individuals are expendable and the truth is optional.
Well, you're speaking of Lawrence O'Donnell on his show on MSNBC. He had Anna Marie Cox, already convicted Kavanaugh of what he did, and then went on to see, you know, what she's hoping to find on Monday's hearing if it happens.
How he treats a woman's pain. And that is something I'm going to be paying attention to on Monday. How does he respond to what is happening, whether or not he agrees that this happened with her? Does he take her pain seriously? Do the people interrogating her take her pain seriously? Now, I'll give you a spoiler alert. I don't think Brett Kavanaugh takes women's pain very seriously, and I know that because of the decisions he's made as a judge. But I think that to have that unfold on, you know, national television live will be quite instructive.
This is another reason why I turn off MSNBC.
Well, I'll tell you what.
How is his pain? He doesn't feel. How does she know? She doesn't know.
Per Molly Hemingway, her write-up in The Federalist. Well, then, if that's true about Brett Kavanaugh, then there should be impeachment proceedings afoot right now to remove him from the D.C. Court of Appeals.
Oh. Oh, that's right. He's still in the D.C. court.
If he's not, if this disqualifies him from the high court, wouldn't it necessarily disqualify him from the appellate court? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Holly and Hudson, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, good morning. As Amy knows, I have many issues with this woman accusing Brett Kavanaugh. But probably my biggest issue is that she's weak and makes women look weak. This incident lasted probably 90 seconds. She claimed in the New York Post that it derailed her life for 4 or 5 years. Then it comes up 32 years later in marriage counseling as probably some excuse as to why her marriage isn't working. This is a weakness in the American spirit. We are accommodating people who don't have guts. And I want to give you an example of something that happened to me yesterday. So I am a substitute teacher. I'm going to give an essay test tomorrow. I get a letter forwarded from the teacher that one of the kids in the class would prefer to do the essay test verbally. Not comfortable writing, makes them really nervous when they have to write on paper.
Too bad.
Okay, so where do we draw the line here, accommodating weakness? If I would have come home from a party, and I could have, I'm the same age as these people, and said to my parents, oh my gosh, I was at a party, and a boy jumped on top of me, and I got really scared, my dad would have said, grow up, kick him in the naughty bits.
In
the business, yep. And get on with life. Instead of this coddling and this making people so weak, why does society think that makes people stronger? It is undermining our value as Americans, our value to go get them, our value to get up and take the world by the horns. And it's so acceptable now to just accommodate weaknesses. And I'm sick of it. And I'm sick of her.
I'm sick of it. And honestly, no. And remember, Holly, this is why we have no friends. But if she was truly abused, if I was in her position, yeah. I'd want to face my accuser. And this song and dance, this little cat and mouse game, is so ridiculous. If he allegedly touched you, come to D.C. or at least let the lawmakers, you know, Grassley's offering California lawmakers or lawmakers to go to California to talk to her.
Well, also, I want to understand exactly what the issue is, because they're always moving the goalposts. First, it was an FBI investigation.
Yeah, that's what the first demand.
Now they're saying she's not ready to testify. Well, is it about her preparedness or is it about the FBI investigation or both?
Maybe she's worried about perjury. I mean, you're going to be under oath, so you have got to tell the truth.
Bob in Mount Clair.
Good morning. I think they ought to have an FBI investigation. That woman ought to. They ought to reactivate Andrew McCabe. He has experience with phony FISA warrants and things such as that. And besides, with his new book, he portrays himself as St. George versus Donald the Dragon. So he'd be the right guy, right?
Thanks for the call, Bob.
And even, you know, the Hollywood elites are standing behind it. I don't even know if you want to hear this, but Julianna Moore, Eva Longoria, they've put together a support video titled, We Believe You.
Dear Professor Ford.
Dear Professor Ford.
Dear Professor Ford.
Marissa Tomei.
We know how difficult it is to stand up to powerful people.
We want to thank you for publicly sharing your story of sexual violence.
As members of the Senate determine whether Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh
should serve as a Supreme Court Justice.
This context
I like the mix.
Is critical. The behavior you described was wrong
and runs directly counter to upholding the law
and promoting justice.
He should not be.
He should not be nominated. He should not be nominated. We applaud you and we salute you, Professor Ford.
I was hoping Hollywood would weigh in so we could understand where the truth is and just dispose of this case. I mean, now we know.
Yeah, they don't care about the facts.
Peggy in Chicago.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm amazed that the general public would even consider this as valid, since 27 years ago, Clarence Thomas had his life destroyed by Anita Hill. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're here.
And I wanted to say, too, that I think it's kind of a smokescreen because the deep state is about to get flushed down the drain. You know, Congress requested information, and they couldn't get the bureaucracy to respond, okay? And Trump has now, Monday, he ordered the bureaucracy to give up the information on the dossier and stuff.
Right.
And once it comes out, I mean, he ordered the page numbers, everything was very specific, and the information was easy to get. And they
well, it's a matter
responded.
Of it's a matter of declassifying information. Thanks for the call, Peggy. Appreciate it. And that process is now ongoing, and it's drawing a lot of attention from all the Obama apparatchiks in the intel community who are now, you know, calling on people to stop Trump's madness of declassifying portions of documents related to the various investigations and from Carter, the FISA, to surveil Carter Page, to other documents. And so we're going to see
and speaking
what
of Trump,
comes of that.
He again, he's had measured responses. He's not letting this get under his skin because every day reporters ask him about it. And he's just, you know, he's standing by his man.
I'd really want to see her. I really would want to see what she has to say. I can only say this. He is such an outstanding man. Very hard for me to imagine that anything happened.
Then let the Senate do its job. Stay out of the way. This all comes down to three senators, Murkowski, Collins, and Flake. So give, per their desire, particularly Flake, to give her an opportunity to have her say. The opportunity is present. She can choose not to have her say or to have her say. And then they move to markup. And if whether the hearing occurs or not on Monday, it seems to me the timeline the Senate is on is move to markup. Schedule, and then there's...
So they said if she doesn't show up Monday... Oh, sorry. If they don't show up Monday, they're going to have a vote on Wednesday.
Well, probably next Monday. Probably the following Monday, because there are certain time restrictions in terms of how quickly you can move to actual floor vote. But, yeah, move it along. The opportunity's present. Take advantage of it. Don't take advantage of it. And then we have to move along. We have to move. We have to go. Sorry.
Bye-bye.
Marty in Naperville.
You still here?
You guys just played a tape of, or whatever you call it, of Hollywood, including Eva Longoria.
Yeah.
Who was in Desperate Housewives for the only sake so she could run around half naked, whose character had an affair with a child. So as long as she's profiting...
Marty,
this is ridiculous.
Thanks for the call, Marty.
I didn't know I'd get you all worked up about the video.
I think he's upset that Desperate Housewives was canceled.
I think so, too.
Bruce in Bloomingdale.
Good morning. You know, I'm amazed that anybody still believes that peaceful coexistence with the left in this country is actually possible. There's a much larger point being made here, and it's not just about Judge Kavanaugh. They're about destroying anybody that gets in the way of the goals of the left. And anybody who dares to accept an appointment by this president for any post can look forward to being smeared, lied about, and absolutely ambushed in the most unethical ways. Mitch McConnell ought to yank Dianne Feinstein off that committee today. She ought to be stripped of every post that she sits on and put into a broom closet at the Senate for conduct unbecoming. I mean, this is beyond the point of ridiculous to dangerous, and we need to wake up and pay attention because these people mean what they say.
Thanks, Bruce. Gary in Barrington.
Yeah, my thought on the whole deal is that it never happened. What happened to all the women who accused Roy Moore? As soon as he lost, they disappeared. Same thing is going to happen with Judge Kavanaugh. As soon as he wins, they will disappear.
Thanks for the call, Gary. What did happen to the Roy Moore accusers? Where do those matters stand? I mean, you know, some of it couldn't be legally adjudicated because statutes had run, so I'm not sure what more could have been done other than to make it public and to litigated politically. So there's that issue.
Yeah, he had more than a few accusers, though.
Well, I understand. But, I mean, the point is, did they disappear, or this is really all they could do was try to stop him from being a senator because to impact him politically because you couldn't impact him legally? So, you know, there is that issue. Lewis in Dayton, Texas.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. How are you guys doing this morning?
Morning.
Dan, you made a comment earlier about the left had stated that they felt that the accuser was being pressured into testifying because the Republicans wanted to report him and testify. I think they're looking at it the wrong way. You know, first of all, if a person is accused of doing something like that, you want to get the facts and you want her to come forward right away because you want to get that type of person, you know, not get them elected, but also you want to get them off the street. Secondly, they need to realize that we're gathering facts to ensure that we're accusing and, you know, blaming the right person for this, because you don't want to put someone's life, you know, in jail. You don't want to put someone in that position. Brian Banks, I don't know if you remember him. He was the high school kid who got arrested for the alleged rape that later on turned out to be false. You know, he, from the story I read, he had a very promising career. All these colleges were coming to look at him. He was going to be the next great linebacker for the NFL. These accusations came. He was sent to jail, I forgot for how many years, but, you know, essentially, you know, his life was ruined. You know, family and just everything was ruined, all the money that was spent. So this is why, you know, the Republicans and a lot of people want her to come forward to gather these facts so that you're not ruining someone's life and someone's not being falsely accused.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Lewis. Thanks for the call.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And you heard about that terrible shooting in the South Loop yesterday. A teenager and a six-month-old baby shot. Three people shot. South Loop. Like State and Cermak. Okay. Uh-huh. I know, though, that Tiny Dancer is, even though he's a lame duck, he's got a lot of work to do. So he's going to end on a high note. And all these people coming in behind him are going to enter on a high note, too. Gary Chico, Queen Sugar, Dopey Daily. There's this story. We talked about this a few weeks ago, and we're updating the story. It's about Chicago SWAT team, Chicago SWAT officers. Yeah. Sort of important. The police in general, SWAT specifically. We talked about detectives and clearing cases. That's important, too. But all aspects of public safety are front and center and should be in this mayoral election. Frankly, just for Chicago residents or tourists or suburbanites who like to visit Chicago and want to be safe. Important. Chicago Fraternal Order of Police recently filed a complaint that claims Chicago SWAT team has a shortage of manpower that endangers the public and the police force. We talked about this before, how Chicago SWAT operates differently than other cities for cost saving.
It's mm-hmm. all about the money.
Unlike SWAT teams in other cities, by the way, this is reported in one of the papers I started, ChicagoCityWire.com. The Chicago Political Press Corps is too busy reprinting Preckwinkle press releases, at least over there at the AFL-CIO Times, and otherwise doing the bidding of the established political order. Unlike other SWAT teams in other major U.S. cities, Chicago's team has no on-call system in place that guarantees a minimum recommended number of officers will respond to, say, the taking of hostages, the threat of a suicide, or other emergencies during off-duty hours. This is from the FOP complaint. The situation has been addressed by members of the SWAT team with their supervisors on countless occasions in debriefs over the years. As of this time, still nothing has been done. Oh, it's amazing with all the change agents that we've had as mayors and members of the August City Council. June 15th incident's an example where this is a problem. as if it isn't obvious, but let's make it concrete. SWAT team members responded to reports of a 24-year-old man firing off a handgun, then barricading himself in a garage. Four on-duty SWAT officers responded immediately. Only eight of the 50 called who were off-duty responded. According to the complaint, that was not enough manpower to secure a proper perimeter. The result was the armed subject was able to break the perimeter, which endangered citizens, district personnel, members of the SWAT team. Additionally, the inadequate number of SWAT personnel did not give SWAT officers on the scene nor Chicago police negotiators the time and resources to de-escalate the situation. Ultimately, an officer shot the man in the lower body with a rifle after he pointed his handgun at police, and then the man committed suicide at the scene. A former SWAT team member told Chicago City Wire that non-lethal beanbag shells from a shotgun or sponge rounds from a .44 should have been used as soon as it was clear that negotiations were getting nowhere and the man was a threat to civilians and officers. CPD is pushing for and wants de-escalation, but its own SWAT team couldn't do it, said this former SWAT team member. The reason they didn't employ less lethal alternatives is because they didn't have enough personnel, and that's because they don't have a formal on-call system.
That is so strange, because I've thought all these years that they've had an on-call system. That's what they have in the suburbs. They have special task force where if there's a barricade situation, they all come running. They have their gear and they put it on, and then they arrive at the scene.
I mean,
as quickly as possible. But that's
we're what at 700-800 murders, 3,000 shootings a year.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had say you had some sort of domestic or even international terrorist attack in Chicago. It's a major city. It's a possibility. You know, we've seen these one-offs, these people that are self-radicalized or all kinds of instances. Training logs show that Chicago SWAT does not meet the standards established by the National Tactical Officers Association for a full-time force and barely meets standards for a part-time force, said one former team member. For example, SWAT has no training in explosives breaching. In a hostage situation, you have to know how to enter in from a wall inside of the building because the bad guy is either covering the entrance or has it blocked. Even the SWAT teams in smaller cities know how to do this, not in Chicago. He also said the city could cover the cost of an on-call system by getting rid of some overtime pay for SWAT officers. Some are making well over 100 grand on a base salary of 85. He said one officer is making over 200 grand. You know, this is where the kleptocracy endangers your safety. The corruption tax that we giggle about, that's the city of big shoulders. That's just how it works in Chicago.
Chicago.
The city that works. Yeah, right. You think so? Oh, meanwhile, the big story. Obama land gets a 99-year lease for $10.
$10.
That's what everybody wants to talk about.
This is how we can
about.
Make money. We're going to give George Lucas that land for $1.
We made 10 times what we were going to give Lucas.
I mean, you can't even pay for a fourth of a parking spot with $10.
That's a great deal.
$10?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do they justify that?
It's going to be our 12th museum on Park District land, and this is going to be a great tourist attraction that will fill the city coffers so that we can...
We can romp around on the roof because there's going to be green space there, and then there's going to be a golf course, right?
It's going to be great.
Right, Dan? There's going to be a golf course?
Steve in Hinsdale.
I've got a nephew, Dan, who's a deputy sheriff in a urban county over in Michigan. I won't tell you which one it is. It's not Wayne County. But he's been on the force for 25 years. He was a SWAT guy when he was younger. He's been telling me that SWAT all over the country right now is just going downhill fast. Nobody wants to do it anymore. Everybody's worried about the blowback. Everybody hates police. Just not worth it for these guys to do SWAT. It's not a mandatory requirement. You kind of have to be the badasses and sign up for it. Nobody wants to. It's a big problem. Thanks, Dan. Have a great day.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Steve. Interesting. All right. I understand that. We talked a little bit about this with Gary McCarthy yesterday, candidate for mayor, about needing a mayor, perhaps him. that will back the police. If you don't have the civilian political backing, you know it, and it changes the way police do their job. And the results are what you see on the streets of Chicago. I mean, I understand. It's contained to certain neighborhoods, so everything's fine. Okay. Ralph and Rantoul.
Hey, good morning. I'm just wondering if it's going to hurt the police force ability to police if every time they draw their service weapons, before they draw them, they have to get a hold of Eric Holder on his mobile phone and give a brief verbal description of where they are and what's going on so that they can unlock the combination on their holsters and draw a service weapon.
Yeah,
and,
the combination.
You know, maybe protect themselves.
Yeah, well, now the good news is if Holder is not available, they are allowed to call Loretta Lynch. So they've got a backup there. Thanks for the call, Ralph. And also, don't forget, after they've cleared the drawing of their weapon with either Holder or Lynch, then they have to ascertain the suspect's preferred pronoun usage. Then they may engage. Joe in Villa Park.
Yeah. Now that the city's been put on notice about their inadequacies, and God forbid if something ever happened to me and it's because of their inadequacies, doesn't that leave me the ability to civilly sue them for millions?
I mean, it certainly heightens the legal exposure. Thanks for the call, Joe. I mean,
didn't think about that.
You've got sovereign immunity issues that play into this, perhaps. But
sovereign immunity—that was the name of your college band, right?
Yeah,
was it a cover for
New Order cover band?
New Order.
Yeah. New Order. Mike on the North Side.
Hey, don't worry about it. I'm not charging the Obama Temple of Open Change. If a wedding party wants to have its picture taken at
where?
Millennium Park, somebody comes up and tries to sell you a $300 permit.
Yeah.
That's where they're going to get their money.
Oh,
you know, they've
I
got
see.
Their priorities straight.
Yeah. Yeah.
This, they interfere with your pictures unless you buy a permit in advance for $300 to take pictures at a public park that your taxes already paid for.
Yeah, and I don't
heard of that.
I don't know. Maybe they do. Thanks for the call, Mike.
I know Ronnie Woo Woo charges if you take a picture with him.
What's his rate?
They suggested donation is $1 to $5.
$1 to $5 for Ronnie Woo Woo, or $300 for the bean. I guess I'd go with Woo Woo.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Sure, boy, it brings back memories. Dan and Amy, the Super Bowl halftime show performer has been announced. It's not going to be Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, he was
He's
last
not going
year,
back
right?
to back.
Lady Gaga, her show was the best, and Beyonce's was good.
Well, I'll give you a hint.
Yeah?
It's music for people who hate music.
Oh.
I'll give you one more hint. It's going to make Eric and Kathy listeners very happy.
Maroon 5.
That's it.
Yay.
You know, just like it. I mean, it's just. It's a violation of the Geneva Convention, that music.
Well, people aren't happy because it's going to be, the Super Bowl is going to be in Atlanta this year. And it's a little more urban, and they want rappers, they want hip-hop artists. They were tweeting yesterday, is there a band more generic, Caucasian, and corporate than Maroon 5?
Family Guy's Meg's pretty happy.
Hey, Meg, I got you something for our 3-week anniversary.
Wow, a Maroon 5 CD!
Yeah, I remember how you told me you like terrible music, so I thought you might appreciate it.
You're so thoughtful.
They should have gone with, like, somebody, I mean, somebody well, good.
They wanted Usher.
No.
Maybe now he'll put him
no.
in. Because you know
no.
artists invite other artists to the halftime
how about,
show?
How about, like, this Kygo guy? You know Kygo?
Kygo. What does Kygo sing?
Remind Me to Forget. Oh. That's an awesome song.
Okay, I'll look it up.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
good morning, Dan and Amy. Taking your recommendations for Super Bowl halftime show in between serious topics like the confirmation of a Supreme Court nominee, we disclosed at the end of the last hour it is Maroon 5.
Right, that'll be singing, they're performing at halftime this year.
Right, you can't call what they do singing, that's right.
Well,
I've suggested Kygo. Mike Scott has suggested Atlanta's very own Zac Brown Band.
Oh, Zac Brown's good.
That'd be pretty
good. They put on a nice show at Wrigley.
Yeah.
Mm. I like Luke Bryan. I have a little crush on him right now.
Yeah.
Because I went to his concert. Mm-hmm. Got an email. Remember when Dan came on board and he was very, very serious? Amy, look how you've loosened him up and brought out his vocal abilities.
No, I don't remember that at all. I don't remember that, and I don't recall it in present. Speaking of remembering things, it's going to turn our attention to the state of play with respect to Kavanaugh's nomination. White men turn out to be a real big problem in this saga, according to a white dude from California named John Garamondi, who is parroting the party line.
Women across this nation should be outraged at what these white men senators are doing to this woman. This woman needs a fair hearing, as every woman does who brings forth a charge such as Professor Ford is bringing forth.
So, again, tell me that this is not about the left's identity politics. You have a senior citizen, crusty white dude from California who's a Democrat mayor of Congress. He doesn't say Republican senators. White men senators. That's the talking point he got from Mazie Hirono, all the men of the country, shut up. That's the talking point he got from DiFi. That's the talking point that everybody is repeating, because it is about moving suburban women to the polls on November 6th and making their framing their choice for congressional offices around cultural identity, not around economic self-sufficiency. And so you heard the same rap from Kristen Gillibrand. You know, the grilling that she received from Jim Acosta on CNN. Here's a microphone talk. And Gillibrand did so. She's being treated unfairly, talking about Ms. Ford, of course.
The fact that Mark Judge doesn't want to testify, well, maybe he doesn't want to be under oath. And so that is a red flag to me that they are trying to railroad this. They're trying to create a sham hearing on Monday. There's no rush for this. They have not given her time. And to not even have the courtesy of an investigation of the facts first and then have corroborating witnesses. Anita Hill had not only an FBI investigation, but she had 22 witnesses on her allegations, with more witnesses that wanted to testify. This sounds like a sham hearing designed only to have a he said, she said. But the truth is, I believe her. She has a credible allegation against Judge Kavanaugh. She told her therapist 5 years about it. Her husband, she told a friend a year ago. She told a reporter before Judge Kavanaugh was even nominated. This is all indicia of truthfulness. And now she wants an FBI investigation to get to the facts. I believe her, and I think the women of America should be paying attention right now to how the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee are treating a woman who wants to testify, to make sure that someone who gets a lifetime appointment has the character necessary to be a Supreme Court justice.
There it is, and I go back again to say, yes, of course, they love the delay. I think they realize they're not going to get it. So now it's about using Ms. Ford as a cudgel to beat Republicans up and to beat out suburban women for November 6th. That's all it is, and it couldn't be more transparent, particularly with those like Gillibrand auditioning for the presidency in 2020 or the Democrat nomination for in 2020. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by our colleague Mike Gallagher, host of the eponymous Mike Gallagher Show that comes on after ours, 9 to 11 a.m. weekdays on these airwaves.
I love that word, eponymous.
Oh,
love that word.
By the way, I had one of those in my backyard last night.
Listen, Amy, Dan,
yeah.
Barry Manilow, halftime Super Bowl. Now that would be a Super Bowl I'd watch.
He's passed away, hasn't he?
No, he's not.
No, he's not. Come on.
He's on his fifth facelift. What are you talking about?
I would say.
I write the songs.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
I love that's my era.
Oh, boy.
That's my
era.
Barry
Manilow. Air Supply. What about Air Supply?
What about Jewish Elvis, Neil Diamond?
Hey, I take Neil Diamond. That's my era, too.
That would be a good show, too.
I could do I'm Coming to America, you know, make all the people exercised about immigration excited, you know, it could be a big deal.
I mean, half the group would take a knee.
And by the way, Paul McCartney, I would say Paul McCartney, but he can't keep his hands to himself.
Oh.
Ouch. Well, hopefully no wardrobe malfunctions with any of these guys.
That is for sure.
So good morning.
Good morning.
Are we going with Dr. Blasey or Dr. Ford?
I have to call her Professor. I just call her Christine Ford.
But you know, her lawyers are insisting that she's wants to be known by Blasey, not Ford.
Oh, Christine Blasey?
So
yes.
Miss Blasey now. Okay.
Yes,
fine.
Yes. I'm not sure why that's important in a sea of idiocy. You know, guys,
we're looking for more people to come forward.
And also, Mike, on this show, I don't know, you know, you run your own shop, all right? On this show, you have to be a medical doctor to be called doctor. I'm a juris doctorate. I don't demand that Amy call me doctor. There's no doctors unless you're a medical doctor.
And isn't it always great that the pretentious people who insist, you always know who they are. They say, my name is doctor. I'm a doctor.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Be quiet. Would you just stop and put your name down?
Yeah, okay,
but they're
Bob.
Proud of that. Hey,
right.
Good for them. Good for them. You know, hey, there's been a history of the political parties, and I like the way the tide is turning, because for a long time it seemed the Republican Party was getting really good at snatching defeat out of the jaws of victory. You know, we've talked about that and lamented that over the years. The Democrats are doing this right now. This thing is backfiring in a way that they never anticipated. They are hoping, as you said, Dan, to drive women to the polls. They're thinking this is going to be a midterm election issue, and that's all this is about. This isn't about the alleged abuse of a woman 36 years ago. This isn't about Dr. Blasey or Professor Ford. This is about politicizing a very serious allegation that is going to follow this guy around now for the rest of his life, no matter what happens. But you're hearing the pushback from people like Mika Brzezinski, from the San Francisco Chronicle, Diane Feinstein's home paper, saying she handled this terribly. This has been unfair to the accuser, unfair to the accused. You know, and they play the clips. It makes my head spin to listen to the audio clips you just played. This is terrible. She's not getting a fair hearing. The Republicans are bending over backwards.
Yep.
To give her a fair hearing. You want it in private? We'll give it in private. You want us to come to you in California? We'll come to you in California. We just want you to be heard, because of course somebody who makes an accusation like this deserves to be heard. Now,
I heard Senator Grassley say yesterday that there's a 10 a.m. deadline Friday.
Correct.
To decide whether or not she's going to be testifying or talking to them, whether it's in D.C. or California, right?
Correct. And that was on the table last night. I mean, the lawyers came out early on, made all the rounds. They were on ABC, CBS, NBC, all the morning shows the other day. She'll go anywhere, anytime. She wants to tell her story. You know, to reasonable, normal Americans, it is not a stretch to say that if you're going to come forward and try to destroy a man because you feel he did something to you 36 years ago, you're going to have to tell the story. There's nothing unreasonable about that. Tell the story. Let at least the senators on the Judiciary Committee hear you. Let them hear him. But of course, we know that none of this is being done in good faith, guys. It's not. It just isn't. It's all about the midterm election. And I really do believe, you see the generic congressional ballot, Republicans picked up 4 points in the last couple of days. It's getting tighter and tighter. It shouldn't be tight in an off-year election like this. This ought to ostensibly go to the Democrats. I don't know that it will. I really don't. This could be that 11th hour mistake that the Democrats are making that lets the Republicans hang on to the House and the Senate. We shall see.
Yeah, I mean, I think, this has been coming into the fore for some years now. But this sort of national case of such profile really drives it home, I think, to men generally, and particularly when you have a United States senator tell men to shut up and step up and do the right thing for once. The antipathy towards men, the presumption of guilt that all men live under now, at least according to some on the left. Obviously, not everybody believed that. Right-thinking people, reasonable people of all political stripes don't believe that. But the political class of the left absolutely seems to, or they want to capitalize on a minority of the population that does believe that and could drive people, could sort of herd people in the direction of cultural Marxism the way they've been so successful on so many other issues. But you've got to see, you've got to suspect that people are watching this and saying, So an unfounded allegation from 3 decades ago could derail a Supreme Court nominee who's otherwise had a distinguished career, with no evidentiary support. Why couldn't it derail me in my corporate office or my law practice or my dental practice or whatever?
This is the real danger of those who lift up the Me Too movement, who conflate letting the accuser be heard and insisting that the accuser be believed. If you've noticed, the activists often say, well, you have to believe her. You just have to believe her. Wow. And that's so wrong. I mean, that presumes, you know, if you were going to script this out, you've got a progressive professor from the San Francisco Bay Area who obviously doesn't want Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. So if you're scripting this, again, I'm not trying to remove the, you know, or assert that this didn't happen. We don't know. We don't know what happened 36 years ago. But there certainly can be a suspicion of a political motive here. But to say if somebody makes the accusation, then it must be so. She must be believed. That's first of all, it's un-American. It's antithetical to everything we believe in terms of a presumption of innocence, due process, and again, normal Americans. Kurt Schlichter. I don't know what you guys think of Kurt, but I just think he's so terrific, and he's got a book out. I'm going to talk to him next week on the radio show. He calls it the normals. I mean, the normal Americans are watching, are paying attention. Normal Americans understand these basic principles of fairness and decency that seem to be out the window. So just some reason and logic. You know, there's no logic absent logic. And how about this goofball from Hawaii? She's now become the Maxine Waters. I mean, I love these guys that show they're real. I mean, these are not people splitting atoms anytime soon. I mean, good Lord, Kamala Harris, you know, the more you hear these from these folks, the more you realize there's not a whole lot of lights on upstairs. And this is what voters are going to have to decide November the 6th. Register to vote. You got to get out. You must vote. We've got to we've got to let our voices be heard because we can fix this.
So, Mike, do you think it's a possibility she has a case of mistaken identity?
That's what's being suggested in the last 12 hours. A lot of people are starting to suggest that. Of course, that was first floated by Orrin Hatch. 36 years ago, I'm not trying to be glib here. I don't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. So, you know, if something happened in a drunken sort of party of a bunch of teenagers, who knows? I'll tell you one thing about the so-called narrative of predators who do these kinds of horrible things. There almost always are other corroborating cases that come forward, and there has not been anything with Brett Kavanaugh. This
again,
is it.
I did something stupid in high school when I was 15. I remember exactly where I was. I remember how I got there, and I remember how I got home. For her to say she doesn't know whose house she was in.
We can all relate to that. Barry Wobbler and I when I was in a freshman in high school,
Barry. We
stole bottles of beer and we somehow were running down the alley in my hometown of Dayton, Ohio, and the police were coming down the alley after us. We were so scared. We dropped the bottles. They crashed. I was crying. He was sobbing. and I remember exactly what block it was. I can tell you what time
you
of day it was.
Drink the beer, Mike.
No, well, no, it broke. We broke it. We dropped it all.
Drink beer again.
Oh, Mike. My gosh. That's why I've never really been much of a, I'm kind of a teetotaler. I remember the Dayton police chasing us down. But honestly, all kidding aside, I remember exactly what block it took place in, what time it happened. I mean, and you know, that was our traumatic thing, you know, stupidly doing something with beer. Imagine what it must be like to have a horrible assault and how you'd forget where, when. You know, how he got there, how he got home. I don't know. The whole thing has a lot of questions, more questions than answers. And I also fear for and feel for people with legitimate claims of assault who now are being sort of, you know, going to be marginalized by something like this being politicized. This shouldn't be politicized. It ought to be about the truth, and people ought to know what really happened.
All right. Well, Mike, I'll find out what Amy did when she's 15, and I'll let you know what it was.
I want to know all the details, and then we'll put it to a Barry Manilow song.
Very good. Mike Gallagher, host of The Mike Gallagher Show, 9 a.m. weekdays on these airways, follows us. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
At the Copacabana, the hottest
Barry Manilow for a halftime show? I mean, come on.
I mean, how old is Mike Gallagher? I mean, I love him, but he just showed his age.
Yes.
He's old?
Again, Maroon 5. What?
You want me to steal second base? What?
There's a cuneiform going on in the news group.
He's 56.
Oh.
Mike Gallagher.
Really?
Is, yes.
My age? No, I'm about 56.
No, you're 57.
I'm in my 40s.
But don't tell anybody.
We were talking about the Super Bowl halftime show.
Mm-hmm. And that's it's not where, urban enough.
That's where Gallagher suggested Barry Manilow. But he's universal.
Right.
But I think you got to go with somebody current, you know, and that's for the kids like me that are on the scene, keeping it tight.
You mean the hipsters from Linkin Park driving a Jetta?
Maroon 5 doesn't cut it.
Brian, either you cooperate or I blow my Adam Levine dog whistle.
Hey, my voice isn't that high.
It is. It is, though.
Oh, my God. Oh. All right.
Oh, I love this song. Look for the girl with the broken smile.
Exactly. I couldn't hold it. It's just disgusting.
Yeah, maybe a suggestion would be to cross genres and cross age groups with Gladys Knight, who now lives in Atlanta.
I have like an altitude headache from listening to Maroon 5.
It might be true.
It's disgusting. So Zach Brown Band, that's what Mike Scott has. I've got Kygo.
I've got Luke Bryan because I have a crush on him right now.
Yeah, but Luke Bryan's from Oklahoma, is he not?
He's in my heart. Okay. I don't care where he's from.
Oh, boy, that's such a nice sentiment. We'll see if we can get you an 8x10.
and in my iTunes.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Tickets for Freedom Summit Chicago are on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, the social media giants, and the issue of their cultural influence and their political influence. Twitter, Jack Dorsey gave an extended interview that was republished in Recode, talking a little bit more about how Twitter, you know, leans left. Remember Dorsey's
little Ted?
We lean left. There's no question. He was asked, what's been your experience in your listening tour, especially with conservatives? What have you learned? He said, I've learned personally, I've not tended to have conversations with many people on the more conservative end of the spectrum or right end of the spectrum. So goal number one was to say that we're here, be present, and see the folks who I personally haven't talked to. And as an organization, we tend not to naturally lean towards. And I don't know if there are any fundamentally different leanings that are different from the conversation that we've had with folks who are more on the left end of the spectrum. We tend to lean towards more of the liberal end of the spectrum or libertarian end of the spectrum, wherever that lies. I mean, honestly, like listening to these guys, it's like listening to Napoleon Dynamite and his brother Kip there that run Google. They may be geniuses when it comes to social media and algorithms and coding technology. But when it comes to communication, they're mopes. Can barely understand what they're saying. The thinking is completely muddled. You don't know what the hell they're talking about. But anyway, Jack Dorsey went on to say that he concedes the point that conservatives at Twitter don't feel safe coming forward to express their views for fear of retribution, professionally or socially. Huh. And that's also the case with people posting on Twitter more and more. Lila Rose, who runs Live Action's pro-life organization, she was recently on Tucker Carlson talking about how Twitter promotes Planned Parenthood. It's okay for Planned Parenthood to tweet that a woman has a right to an abortion. But when Lila Rose and her Live Action account tries to promote the idea that a baby has a right to life, Twitter considers that inflammatory. She said she tweeted under her own name, my account and at Live Action's account. So her account, Live Action account, had been banned for advertising from years because we're pro-life. So, I mean, just again, understanding what the landscape is and how that landscape influences people's understanding of what's true and what isn't.
So let's say you were hypothetically with your hypothetical children.
Yeah.
What is it? Dan and Dan Jr.? What are their names? I'm sorry.
Dan Jr. and Dan the Third.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dan Jr. and Dan the Third. Yeah. Which one do you like better?
I love them both.
Equally. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, standard answer. Mm-hmm. Let's just say hypothetically you're in charge of Twitter. Would you let everyone's voice be heard? Let both sides be heard? Would you?
Oh, no, I see. I want ideas presented side by side. I want the left to talk more.
You want more of the Senator Hirono?
I want more Maisie. I want more Gillibrand. I want more Cory Booker. I want more of his imaginary friends like T-Bone. The more they talk, the better it gets. What they do is operate in secrecy and squelch opposing views because they don't want views presented side by side. They don't want debate. No, no, I want it. I want the intellectual sparring and the fight. So, you know, come one, come all. I mean, now if you're trolling with like hateful propaganda promoting Nazism or something, and otherwise interrupting substantive conversations, maybe I tell you to take a walk because I say here are the terms of use. It's just like regulating your own personal Facebook page. Here are my personal terms of use on my page. You know, if you go there and you're using profanity, or if you're just posting, trolling, posting and reposting the same thing that's off topic and derailing, you know, interesting exchanges, then go do that somewhere else. You don't have a right to my Facebook page. So I sort of apply the same principle if I was head of Google or Twitter or Facebook. I mean, what would you do?
I'd do exactly what you do.
Yeah.
But and then and also, too, banning people and then kicking them off Twitter for a while. Remember at the RNC in Cleveland when Milo got kicked off of Twitter?
Yeah,
and he ran into an executive from Twitter, and they got in a huge fight, and screaming, and chair was flying because he wanted to be put back on Twitter. Is he still banned from Twitter?
I don't know.
That's just
ridiculous. Up with them.
But still, that's stupid. All ideas should be heard.
They're afraid to be.
Everyone has a freedom of speech.
They're afraid to be exposed. The left. I mean, anybody that would eliminate dissent. Yeah, it's the unanimity of the graveyard, to quote Justice Robert Jackson. This also, too, NPR financed by taxpayer dollars. So this is not just regulating who's on, regulating what you can say, sort of what
government-run media.
Sort of what Lila Rose was talking about from Live Action. That Gosnell film is coming out. We talked to one of the producers of that a couple months ago, the film about that. What they suggest, the greatest mass murderer in the history of America, this Kermit Gosnell abortionist in Philadelphia, who's serving a life sentence for killing women and children. Gosnell, the trial of America's biggest serial killer. That's the name of the movie. It's in theaters October 12th. They reached out to National Public Radio to purchase a sponsorship for one of their shows, Fresh Air. There's a problem. The ad copy was not acceptable to NPR. The issue, this sentence. The film is the true story of abortionist Kermit Gosnell. Whoa! Can't say abortionist. Can't say abortionist. NPR's representative, sales rep, ran it up the legal flagpole. The word abortionist will need to be changed to the neutral word doctor.
Doctor? He's a butcher. Everybody's a doctor.
The Gosnell producers countered with, how about abortion doctor? Because that's, you know, what he was. And generously, since he's serving a life sentence for being a murderer. But anyway, no, that's not good enough either. Philadelphia doctor Kermit Gosnell. Philadelphia doctor. For the filmmaker, that's what NPR demanded. That was a deal breaker for the filmmakers and producers. Our movie isn't about a podiatrist or cardiologist or proctologist, said one of the producers. It's specifically about a doctor who performs abortions. Right. But abortion doctor didn't cut it. It's interesting, too. as noted in this piece by Matt Lewis in the Daily Beast, the term abortion doctor, he did a quick search of past NPR stories that that have titles like Joyce Carol Oates' new novel begins with an abortion doctor's murder and an abortion doctor killer appeals to Kansas High Court. Oh, sure, when it's the abortion doctor as the victim, as opposed to the criminal, is what Gosnell is. NPR even did a special series called Training the Next Generation of Abortion Doctors. But for marketing the Gosnell film, you had to go neutral on abortionist or abortion doctor, Philadelphia doctor. So controlling the language. You have to understand, you may not think it's important, just like a gay marriage, marriage redefinition. That's not important. If you don't think it's important, why do you think the left thinks it's important? Sticking on social media, Gabriel Weinberg is the founder of DuckDuckGo.
DuckDuckGo.
Search engine.
I see what they did there. DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, search engine.
Oh, that's right. I knew that.
Did you know, unlike searching on DuckDuckGo, when you search on Google, they keep your search history forever? DuckDuckGo doesn't. It's a value add, value prop. It means they know every search you've ever done on Google.
Oh, boy.
It's pretty scary, but it's just the shallow end of a very deep pool of data that they tend to try to collect on people. What most people don't realize, writes Weinberg, is that even if you don't use any Google products directly, they're still trying to track as much as they can about you. Google trackers have been found on 75% of the top million websites in the world. They're trying to track most everywhere you go on the internet, trying to slurp up your browsing history. He gives you an example. If you use an Android, you know, Google is usually tracking every place you've been via Google location services, how often you use your apps, when you use them, where you use them, whom you use them to interact with, all of your text messages, not encrypted, and your photos. If you use Gmail, they also, of course, have your email messages, Google Calendar, they know your schedule. There's a pattern here. For all Google products, you can expect the same level of tracking. It's pretty much anything they can track, they will. Very much like on Facebook, where you're the product. That's what Google is. They're not a search engine. They're a tracking company. And you're the product. It's just interesting to note, as you've heard now from the leadership of Google in that video that we played excerpts up from last week, that was from right after the 2016 election, about their attitude toward conservatives, their unwillingness to go before congressional committees and answer questions the way that executives from Facebook and Twitter have done. Now, just informing your views, not just about your social media consumption habits, not just about the language, but also about how the biggest and most powerful companies in the world at present are trying to influence how you think about how a free society should be ordered, as expressed on who you vote for on November 6th.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Freedom Summit! Tickets are quickly selling out, so don't miss out on your chance to join us on Saturday, October 27th at the Westin Chicago, Northwest in Itasca. I should say tickets are selling quickly. And this year it's presented by Geiger Wealth Management, Chicago's retirement experts. This year's keynote speakers include former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, James O'Keefe from Project Veritas, Mike Gallagher, who joined us at the 7 o'clock hour, and you can always hear his show beginning at 9 a.m. He's going to be there, as well as Noah Rothman from Commentary Magazine, Kurt Schlichter from townhall.com, and we will be there. So get your tickets today. Go to freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com. And the event always sells out. So again, get your tickets today.
You're a fan of animals, big and small, on land and in the sea, aren't
you,
Amy?
Yeah, I have two fish tanks, two stray cats in my garage, and a dog named Bunky.
How about a lobster tank?
Oh, I had to see that once. what my cousins, we were in at their home in Martha's Vineyard, and they put a lobster in the boiling water, and that sound they made, I will never forget.
Here's the sound a lobster makes.
No, I don't want to hear it.
In boiling water, you ready?
No, I don't want to hear it. I'm not here.
I know, it's traumatic. I agree. It's
no, have you ever heard it?
It's sad. I just, yeah, sure.
No, it's not. It's,
here's another one. I feel so bad for that lobster.
No, it's the worst sound.
Oh, it's
they're
mean.
Crying. They're screaming for their lives. They're in pain, Dan. You watch them suffer, and then they die, and then you eat them, and they are delicious.
Nobody should be subjected, though, to the pain that you hear in the lobster's cry. I mean, that's inhumane. It's not right to do that to any living thing. Charlotte's legendary lobster pound in Maine agrees.
Were they going to stop selling lobster?
No.
In New England?
No. The restaurant's owner, Charlotte Gill, said she feels bad that when lobsters come here, there is no exit strategy. Well, there is. It's,
it's in your gullet.
Belly. Yeah.
Get in my belly.
So what she's done is she places in a box with 2 inches of water.
Yeah. She knock them on the head? But they taste better when they're alive when they go in the water, I guess.
Wait for it. She's placing the lobster in a box in about 2 inches of water, and then marijuana smoke is blown into the water through a hole in the bottom.
Oh, that's
to bake the lobster before he gets boiled.
He gets popped before he's put in a pot?
Exactly.
That's awesome. So then you don't have to hear that god-awful screaming.
Right.
It's the worst sound. I'm not kidding you.
He's his pain. That's what you mean. Well, you can smoke it, you can chew it, you can really try to do it. Smoke it, pot. Yeah. I'll tell you what, if you want to open a restaurant like that in Maine, Niagara College in Southern Ontario is offering a new full-year cannabis production program.
Wow.
Yeah. 1-year certificate in growing pot. Some of the classes take place in a facility that's nicknamed the Cannabunker, a series of shipping containers linked together to form a high-tech, high-security production lab for growing marijuana. Boy, isn't this so evolved. Easing animals' pains, teaching the young people the arts of easing animals' pain. So you go get your cannabis production degree from Niagara College and go up to Charlotte's legendary lobster pound, and you become a practitioner.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. At the end of last hour, we were talking about this restaurant in Maine, Charlotte's Legendary Lobster Pound, that is baking their lobsters before they boil them, baking them as in sedating them with marijuana to ease their pain. But I don't want to be accused of being anti-science here, so we shouldn't propagate the myth that lobsters scream, and that's what you hear when they're boiling.
They're screaming, and then they're like, help! I think I hear them say help.
It sounds like this. I agree. It's blood-curdling. But they don't have vocal cords, so they don't actually scream.
Well, then what's going on? Because there is a noise emanating from their beans.
It's air escaping from underneath their shell.
Oh, is this so disgusting?
Well, I'm just saying.
That's even horrible.
Now, I can't explain Adam Levine.
Stop playing that drop.
But as one tweeter pointed out, that actually is the only way to make a lobster cry, is if you play Adam Levine for the lobster.
Then you sedate them, and then there's no... Well, the air still comes out of their shell, right? Can we do a show and tell tomorrow? Well, if they're not screaming, and then they're sedating them with marijuana, and then they...
Well, it's still... Although somebody else pointed out that if I'm eating a lobster that's been baked...
Am I going to get baked?
No, right. And so that'll want me. Then I'll want to eat more lobster, and it becomes a vicious circle. It's a good point.
Doesn't it?
It's a very complicated geopolitical topic. For a discussion of other complicated geopolitical topics, we're pleased to be joined again by Jed Babin, I don't know if he's ever been to Charlotte's legendary Lobster Pound in Seawall, Maine. But he is a former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense and contributor to the Washington Times and American Spectator. Jet, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. By the way, just to get this out of the way, do you have a Maroon 5 pick to do the halftime show for the Super Bowl next year? Do you have a preference?
Well, no. I think as far as the halftime show goes, the Super Bowl, I don't think I'm going to be watching anyway because they're liable to have Colin Kaepernick. And who cares?
There you go. All right. Yeah. All right. That's a fair position. All right. So, Jed, on to serious matters that are your focus. North Korea sort of fallen out of the headlines the last couple of months with the controversies du jour and Kavanaugh obviously being the present one. But engagement with the North Koreans is ongoing. North Korea and South Korea had a little tete-a-tete the other day. Where do we stand with any real discernible progress as it pertains to North Korean denuclearization?
Well, there really isn't any. The fact that they're having talks between Kim Jong-un and President Moon Jae-in of South Korea is a good thing. We should be engaging with them. And I think Mr. Trump is trying to schedule another summit with Kim in the next couple of months. And, you know, that's all to the good. Talking is better than shooting. But in this case, we have to recognize that there's absolutely nothing going on in terms of their disarmament. There is a proposal now that Kim is going to disassemble some facility on the basis of us giving him some unspecified concessions first. Well, that's not the way it works. We have to have preconditions to anything we do. And if they are not going to, and they're not, if they are not going to do anything substantial or really anything meaningful or anything, whatever you want to call it, whatever adjective you want to say, they're not doing a damn thing to disarm. There's really no reason for us to do anything in return. And we need to keep the pressure on, keep the sanctions on, and keep exposing countries like Russia and China, which are aiding North Korea by buying their coal and shipping oil in to that country and a lot of other things they're doing.
Well, with respect to that, China, with respect to China, so the trade skirmish that we're involved in with China right now with the eye for an eye tariff dynamic, how does that impact any hope we had to enlist China to help us with North Korea, or was that always a quixotic adventure?
Well, it was always quixotic, and it's a very polite term for it. It's baloney. The Chinese have North Korea as a client state. They can have a great deal of control, not entirely control over the Kim regime, but they are not doing much, if anything, to put pressure on Kim to actually denuclearize. They like the fact that Kim Jong-un has nuclear weapons and the missiles with which he can deliver them. They do that because it takes our attention away from what they're doing in the South China Sea and elsewhere. And, you know, these are nations that we have as adversaries. They're not enemies in shooting war, but we can't disavow the idea that China is an adversary and that they're not going to help us because they have no reason to.
What about the prospect then with President Trump and Secretary of State Pompeo of cross-pollinating some of these issues, North Korean denuclearization with trade policy and lowering tariffs and removing new tariffs that have been imposed, a deal that addresses some of both of those issues? Because obviously China is taking a hammering because of the tariffs that have been imposed. It's an open question how long they can endure that or would want to choose to endure that. Maybe this is an opportunity not only to drive for a lower tariff environment between the U.S. and the Chinese, but also for real Chinese engagement with North Korean denuclearization.
Well, I think there's a possibility. I think it's one in a million shot. And for that reason, it's worth pursuing. Even a one in a million shot is better than nothing. But we have to be realistic about it. China has much more leverage over us in this trade war than we have against them. They are not fair traders. They never have been. And, you know, the fact of the matter is the tariffs are going to raise prices for American consumers as much as they hurt the Chinese. So it's a two-edged sword, and we have to really be careful with what we're doing. I think Mr. Trump, I don't know who's giving him advice. I hope Larry Kudlow is, and that he's following it in respect to this trade matter, because, you know, quite frankly, guys, I'm a bullets and bombs guy. I don't know diddly about economics.
Yeah. This morning, the GOP is warning the time is running out for Ms. Ford, Professor Ford, whatever you want to call her, Kavanaugh's accuser, to speak. What do you make of this 11th hour surprise?
Well, I think if there were any credibility to it, we would have heard it from Dianne Feinstein months ago. She's had this letter from Ms. Ford for at least since July or even before that. And I think, again, if there were any credibility in it, we would have heard it a long time ago. I think it's simply a delaying tactic by the Democrats. And I think that Judge Kavanaugh is being, given a great disservice by doing this. He should not be dragged through the mud like this. And you know what? If she doesn't have the guts to come in and testify on Monday, not at some future, you know, unspecified date, if she has not the guts to come in and testify on Monday, I think the whole thing should be ignored.
It's interesting. There was an interesting observation by Sohrab Ahmari in the New York Post about the left's scorched earth policy when it comes to SCOTUS nominees, particularly one that would change the sort of ideological balance of the court, if you will. And he points out that liberals fear their major cultural victories of the past 50 years are democratically illegitimate. Go from Griswold to present, their cultural victories, the march towards cultural Marxism and centralized power, have all been won in the courts, not in state legislatures or through elections, other than elections as the means to judicial appointments. And so it could be undone. And that's why we're in a different environment today than we were 50 years ago or even 30 years ago, because of all the judicial victories that the cultural Marxists have piled up. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's largely right. I think if you look at some of the biggest and most disturbing things that have happened from the court in the past generation or two, I mean, for example, Roe v. Wade, I mean, that's the kind of thing that was imposed by the courts. It was not something that was come up through the states or the state legislatures. And, you know, whether you like it or not, it was a very, very disruptive decision in American polity. And you see now that that disruption is still polarizing Americans everywhere. So you look at a lot of things. I mean, I have no idea whether Roe v. Wade can ever be or should ever be overturned. But I'll tell you, as far as settled law in this country, you know, guys, Plessy versus Ferguson was settled law for a long time.
Right.
Dred Scott was settled law for a long time. And both of those decisions were horrific and deserved to be overturned
right.
in a very short time. So who knows what's going to happen with this court? Again, I think Judge Kavanaugh needs to be confirmed. If this gal does not show up on Monday, I think that she has lost any and all credibility and nothing further should delay the nomination.
Do you think maybe the Senate should subpoena Kavanaugh's accuser to force her? You know, because she started this, and I feel really bad for Judge Kavanaugh, because if she doesn't show up, how is he going to get his reputation back? Is he going to release a statement? I mean, she's trying to destroy him. He's a family man also, and he's a man of the community. He's a volunteer coach.
Well, I don't think that she should be subpoenaed for the simple reason that that's playing into her hand.
Yeah, right.
You know, they want to delay it. Oh, well, we're going to subpoena you next month. We're going to subpoena you in November. I mean, that's just playing into what the Democrats want to do. I think he's got his reputation intact right now. And again, you know, if this person can't specify really what happened, who was there, where it happened, I mean, that just does not sound like there's any credibility to the accusation in any event. And I just don't see that there's much for him to be concerned about it all.
All right. He is Jed Babin, former U.S. Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, contributor to The Washington Times and The American Spectator. Jed, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. A question for you. I know we've focused on federal issues and thinking about the balance of power in Congress come November 6th or come November 7th after the November 6th election. And we're talking mostly about other states. Well, let's talk about our state, because Democrat control of the House runs through Illinois, too. One of the battleground states for Democrats. Their calculus is here is they need to pick up two seats in Illinois. So Peter Roskam, Randy Hultgren, Rodney Davis, Mike Boss, the last two are Central and then Southern Illinois are Republicans, respectively. They're all in competitive races.
How's Roskam doing in the latest poll? Because his opponent is blasting ads everywhere.
Even. And so, and then also legislative races. I mean, in terms of your quality of life, I try to impress upon people, your state and local government has more of an immediate and repetitive impact on your quality of life, where you live, than does a distant federal government outside of national security issues. So are you coming out to vote for state legislative candidates? Because the Democrats are. This from Gateway Pundit captured this. St. Clair County Democrat rally. Jim Hoff down there at Gateway Pundit. Listen to this audio for a Democrat rally, St. Clair County, down by St. Louis, promoting Democrat politicians and the turnout of their base.
We got a great candidate for governor, J.B. Pritzker. He's going to win. He's going to win big. But he won't win if we do not get out and vote. We need to early vote. Like I say, we can play East St. Louis, Ruth, vote often, vote early, vote often, whatever you can get away with.
Shame.
I shouldn't say that, but
it's true.
I really don't care.
Whatever it takes to win.
Yes.
Yep, whatever it takes. That's not funny at all.
It's funny. And East St. Louis, too.
Such a laugh.
East St. Louis. How's East St. Louis doing?
Horrible.
About the same as the south and west sides of Chicago under the same sort of leadership for the same amount of generations. How's
people
it going?
Are probably registered to vote that live in abandoned homes.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Are you coming out? The Trump voters, particularly, who maybe been vote Republican before, weren't participating before, are you coming out on November 6th to vote for members of Congress, to vote for state legislators, and even the statewide ticket, statewide candidates? Take your calls. Another example. Or are you going to get pushed around by the same thugs and their suburban henchmen? Story out of Lake County that would be leading the 10 o'clock newscast in Chicago if the target wasn't a Republican. Ken Idstein is a Republican candidate for state rep in the Grays Lake area, challenging the incumbent Sam Yingling, who has received more money from House Speaker Madigan than any other Democratic House candidate. Lake County. Ken Idstein had a sign. One of Idstein's yard signs was on the lawn, private property, at the home of a Lake County board member named Larry Leafblad. And somebody came by and spray painting Ken Idstein for state representative. Ken Idstein is a gutter slur for a gay person. F-A.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I posted it on social media, Twitter and Facebook for you to see it. Spray painted it on there. Response, the media coverage, no. That's the tenor of the politics, though. And so vote early, vote often, and I don't care, whatever you can get away with. I mean, that should be the state's motto, whatever you can get away with. So are you coming out, or are you going to say everybody is terrible and everybody's the same, so that rationalizes my lack of engagement? And also, I don't want to, get involved in any ugliness, so I'll just let the left be ugly and continue to see Republican leadership surrender to them. And the ones who are willing to fight, I'm not going to make distinctions between those two. I'll just watch them get slaughtered. Or you're going to be an adult and you're going to make distinctions and you're going to pick up something sharp and fight with people who are fighting for you and would like to be fighting with you. Tom in Deer Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning, Dana. And I want to thank you. I really appreciate your efforts in convincing people to get out to vote. I'll give you an example. I'm up here in Roskam's district, and Kasten's got signs left and right. Very few of us, on the Roskam side of the aisle have doing that. They're very animated, Democrats, this election cycle. I think do so much to President Trump. But I have friends that are ardent conservatives. They watch Fox every night, and they don't know that Dan McConkey and Mrs. Walsh are our representatives. So I really appreciate you pushing it on the air like you do.
All right. Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It's time for another one of Dan Prof's parenting tips. You know it.
It's time for Dan Prof's parenting tips. Whoa. Dan Prof's parenting tips. Whoa. Tell your kids to shut up and listen to him.
You're a child.
That
yeah.
Say, you're a child.
And so the question is, free-range parenting or lawnmower parenting?
312-642-5600 is our turnkey Debt Pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
The presentation of this choice and the implications was sparked by a follow-up to a story that we talked about a couple weeks back. This is the story of Corey Wyden, the Wilmette mom, who had the police called on her and thus DCFS investigate her for allowing her 8-year-old daughter to walk the family dog around the block.
Yeah, family dog's name is?
Marshmallow.
Yay! Just seeing if you're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Marshmallow did a really good job on national TV, too.
And so did her little 8-year-old daughter, who she homeschools. Okay. Tribune following up on the story. Pointing out that Corey Wyden is using her newfound platform because of all the attention this has generated to shine a light on the troubles of others, she says, are unfairly caught in the system, and good for her for doing it. I've had well over 100 people writing to me, some asking for help, said Wyden. Wyden, who was able to enlist an attorney friend to help her on the case, make the point that, low-income families don't have the resources to get an attorney and get out in front of a DCFS investigation. Here's another case, the Tribune recounts. In 2013, Natasha Felix let her children, ages 5 and 11, play with their 9-year-old cousin at a playground she could see from the window of her East Ukrainian village home. Passerby called DCFS, setting off a 2-year ordeal before Felix could get an inadequate supervision finding against her thrown out of court. While her case worked its way through the system, Felix said she could not volunteer at her children's school and she had limited job prospects as a home health care aide. It's been extremely stressful, said Felix, who's a 27-year-old single mom. It makes you paranoid about every decision you make. DCFS data, 276,000 calls to its hotline during the last fiscal year. 81,000 of the calls were resulted in investigations, so about one-third. And from those, the office found fewer than 20,000 or less than 25% to have sufficient evidence to support allegations. But yet, among those that did was the Felix case was, at least at the investigative level, the Corey Wyden case, cases like this. And one of the issues is the law, the description of a neglected minor, child younger than 14 left without supervision for an unreasonable period of time without regard for the mental or physical health, safety, or welfare of that minor. So obviously that's open to interpretation, and interpretation by this sclerotic bureaucracy at DCFS and the individuals that work there. I'm not saying that there aren't many that are well-intended and trying to look out for child welfare. But the question is, bureaucracy's best making these judgment calls, or our parents, generally speaking, when it comes to the dog walk around the block or playing with the kids across, playing with your cousin across the street, and cases like this. And then when you have a decision made, a real appreciation for the implications of making a decision like was made against Miss Felix, that 27-year-old single mom, because of how long it takes to adjudicate these matters and the impact it can have on somebody's life, including, by the way, the part of their life raising children.
Right.
So this is why Utah created a free-range parenting law with more specific language. This past May, they voted to protect parenting decisions by revising the state's child neglect law to include certain activities as legal, including
like walking a dog,
children to play at the park unsupervised, walk to and from school alone, sit unattended in a parked car under certain conditions. That's the whole free-range parenting versus going the other direction, which is either ceding authority over your kids and your parenting decisions to the state, or because you're so concerned about that and the judgment of the state, you become
a lawnmower parent.
Which is
so we know what helicopter parents are. That's when they see things because they're always hovering like a helicopter, and they swoop in to help their child. A lawnmower parent will just plow you over. They're trying to, these are parents, according to an educator who wrote an article in weareteachers.com. They're parents who try to spare their children from having to face adversity, struggle, or failure. So basically doing tasks for them, which is basically telling the kids, you can't do this right, so I'm going to do it for you.
Right.
It's not teaching them, you know, self-responsibility. And they don't want any inconvenience or problems or discomfort for their child to face.
It's teaching them to be a 40-year-old who lives in the basement.
Exactly. And that's what people have been doing for a long time, having, you know, lawnmower parenting. And that's why so many kids are still living at home.
Lawnmower parenting, helicopter parenting.
Or free range.
Or something akin to free range parenting. I mean, free range parenting today would have just been called parenting.
Right.
When we were growing up. I mean, go out and play. Don't come back until the sun's down.
And we didn't have clocks, so we didn't know what time it was. We didn't have iPhones. So when the sun was going down, that's when you knew it was time to get on your bike and go have some of your mom's meatloaf.
Yeah, but otherwise it was go do something. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, and stop going in and out door, in and out of the house. You're either outside or you're inside, but no back and forth.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. Let's see, lawnmower parenting, helicopter parenting, or something akin to free-range parenting. What do you think?
Free-range parenting. We have a free-range parent or a couple in our hood, and they've... I'm not into that because sometimes they can freely get themselves into bad stuff and then try and push that off on other kids. You know, like some parents had their kids at Lollapalooza, bought him a 4-day pass, and he's 13 years old. Doesn't sit well. I was not going to let Peyton or Eli go to Lollapalooza by themselves.
That's not the same thing as free-range parenting.
You don't think so?
No, because
I mean,
that's...
well, just letting the kids... But then it works in a way because the kids just go out and play basketball. We have a hoop across the street in the church parking lot.
That's free-range parenting.
That's awesome.
Yeah, free-range parenting isn't like I gave my kid a $80,000 car so he can drive to New Trier. That's not free-range parenting. I spent $600 or $1,000, whatever it was, for Lollapalooza so that my kid could go. No, that's the free-range parenting means like
you're just not hovering over there.
Unsupervised.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but within guardrails of productive activity.
Yeah.
Right?
And an understanding of consequences. I just keep my eye like, okay, because I'll see neighborhood kids there that are younger.
The other thing.
But I would never call the cops on any of my neighbors.
That's
because
insane.
They have their kids out there. And some are young. I mean, one's first grade, second grade. But so what?
I'm still looking to find the woman who called the police on Corey Wyden and her daughter who walking the dog. That woman should be outed. And frankly, you know, this is something akin to filing a false police report. And she should face penalties for doing so.
She wasted resources of police officers who could have been doing something else. I mean, can you imagine if there's a shooting at the same time?
The see something, employ no common sense and say something foments this lawnmower/helicopter parenting. And the whole thing cedes authority from the family to the state, which you should be very resistant to do. Because the state will take whatever you give and then a heck of a lot more. Remember, the whole basis of the state power is intervening in the family. That's what the left is always trying to do. The bulwarks against state power are family and those platoons of democracy that de Tocqueville and Burke wrote about. Voluntary, social, civic organizations. That's what makes America so different. Should guard both jealously. Harry in Hawthorne Woods, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I'm all for free-range parenting because when the children are free-ranged, they taste much better.
That's true. There's no question
and
about that.
And you can ask J.B. Pritzker.
He's eating a lot of children in his commercials.
Thanks for the call, Harry.
Why did everybody ever talk about him? It's a health issue. Have a gripper at any moment, and nobody seems to care.
Oh, God. He's a jolly fat guy, right?
And this song is, he's got a tuba following him. It's a glandular problem.
Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, when I was a kid, we used to go to Wilson Park every day.
Wow.
My dad used to travel a lot, and we'd know we'd have to be home at 6 o'clock for dinner, and you used to watch the sky because my dad used to take the 545 Lufthansa to Frankfurt. When you saw that plane, you knew it was time to go home.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Greg. I mean, here's the other thing, too. It's like, oh, well, you know, you have to lock your doors, say you didn't lose to lock your doors and car doors and all that stuff, and it's different.
Shut your garage door because they will help themselves.
Yeah, it's different. I mean, if you actually look at some of the crime data, when it comes to things like kidnapping, it's really not that different. The data really doesn't bear out that. The disintegration of the family is different, and thus the disintegration of neighborhoods and community is different, so it creates different local dynamics. But the kind of worst-case scenario concerns, the incidence of worst-case scenario, not dramatically different than they were when we were growing up. They're just not.
We used to get up early and ride our bikes to the pool on Euclid there for the whole summer.
That was
without
any
supervision.
That was a Mount Prospect?
Yeah. What was it called? Oh, my God, I can't remember. This is so sad. I'm getting old. Right next to Rob Roy Golf Course there.
Yeah.
The public pool. What was
it
called?
Yeah, okay, you went to the public pool. Nobody cares. David on the north side.
I need to know the name.
Congratulations, you went to the pool by yourself. Oh. You're all grown up now. David, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Hi, speak.
Oh, sorry. Hey, question. So let's just say your school, your private school here in the north side, and they say, hey, your kids are in sixth grade, they can walk home by themselves if the parents say it's okay, and the parents say that's fine, and then everyone checks in, everything's okay, and then on their way from the school to the house, somebody sees them by themselves, calls up, says, hey, guess what? We got some kids here that are unattended, and this is bad news. And so who gets in trouble at that point?
Well, yeah, this is the problem, is that you could have the police come, you could then have them necessarily inform DCFS, and you have the case like in this Wilmette dog walking case. And the point is, it's nonsense. You have a government that doesn't exercise any judgment because we have these rules and procedures and we're just automatons to follow these rules and procedures even when they make no sense. And this is why the Utah legislature moved to make the language in their child neglect law more specific.
So, but at the end of the day, if the parent gets, I mean, all of a sudden they're going to go through years of legal battles, but the person who initiated the call, there's no recourse for that person. I mean, like, hey, you know what?
It's ridiculous.
You made a bad decision, and you guess what? You got to pay for it now, too.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, David. That's why I want to find
a phone call.
We're going to get the police report. We're going to try and find out who this woman is. If somebody in Wilmette knows who she is, then let me know, and I'll be the one that outs her. I'll take the heat, no problem. Sean in Elmwood Park.
Two things, Prof. First off, the Tocqueville, he also was fascinated with the character of the American citizen who was fiercely independent. Is that what the case is now? Absolutely not. Number two, this is the women's fault. Those of us who raise kids understand this at a very early age. First project the kids have in first grade, What happens? The mothers get out of the minivans with the perfect projects.
Not me.
Because they did it. They did it. You do it from the time they're in first grade, and you do it all the way till now when you order the husbands to bring the pants that the kid forgot. It's your fault, ladies. Yours.
Sean,
because you became drill instructors instead of mothers and wives.
And my kids were embarrassed and said, too bad. Your project is good. Work on it. Spend more time on it.
I think Sean is projecting his household onto all households, is what I think is happening.
I think Sean helped with every single project.
I doubt that, actually. Mark in Des Plaines.
This certainly is an armchair discussion this morning. You know, free range, it does sound like free range chicken, but the law is probably right. I mean, this harkens right over to communism where, you know, everybody was a rat on one's neighbor. And is that where we really are today?
Yeah, the lives of others. Yeah, yeah, right.
Well, I mean, we're just going to rat on everyone and everyone's going to go to jail. I mean, aren't we already in bondage enough at this point?
Thanks.
I mean, it gets to be ridiculous.
Thanks, Mark.
Wait, River Trails Park Pool. That was the name of it.
Okay. I mean, so, all right. Gosh, don't you wish you were there now?
Yes.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.